147 days until the Vancouver municipal elections. This is the Camby Report. I'm Matthew Naylor.
I'm Patrick Meehan.
I'm Ian Bushfield.
We have a short, truncated episode for you today. We just wanted to go and update you on a couple of the goings-on in the Vancouver political scene. But we will be back next week with the thrilling results of the NPA mayoral nomination. Unless, of course, something happens, which it seems like they do every damn day these days.
And it looks like both Ian and myself are going to be going to the NPA meeting as well on the Sunday to try to take a look and see what's going on.
And Sunday is a much more sensical day to have a meeting than a Tuesday, which was the original plan. But sometimes you forget to hit send on those official notices.
I mean, to be fair, every political party does this all the time. Like when the BC Liberals scheduled their leadership race decision day on the Super Bowl.
The BC Liberals asked the NFL to move the Super Bowl, and they didn't. And so the BC Liberals very reasonably decided to move the leadership.
So we'll be there. We'll try to maybe put some live streams on our Twitter feed, things like that. Maybe interview a few random people and bring you some content back to the show.
I'm going to be trying to make it, but I am also going to be up in Kelowna watching my brother walk across the stage.
And drinking all the wine.
Drinking all the wine.
On today's show.
On today's show, we have some thoughts on Ian Campbell. Patrick knew a little bit more about Ian Campbell and his history and backstory than either Ian or myself did. And so we wanted to delve a little deeper into Vision's newest mayoral candidate and the person who will be going up against Talib Noor Mohammed for the Vision Vancouver nomination for mayor. Patrick.
Yeah, so Ian Campbell is a two-term elected councillor of the Squamish First Nations, as well as being one of the 16 hereditary chiefs. Now, the thing to note about the two terms is that means that he's been on council, that each term is 4 years in length, so he has actually been on council for quite a long time. And he's been involved in a lot of the things that have occurred with the Squamish First Nations in terms of their business ventures. He's been heavily involved in negotiating the Jericho Lands deal, as well as he's one of the voices that brought forward the billboard that's over the Burrard Street Bridge on Squamish lands.
I saw an advertisement promoting Kinder Morgan the other day.
Oh, that's actually really funny.
From the Alberta government. I tweeted that out.
So that brought in a significant amount of revenue. The Squamish First Nation is very proud of the fact that 80% of their revenue is self-generated, whereas 20% comes from the federal government in the various indigenous services that occur. He's also been involved in the Woodfibre LNG negotiations to ensure that the Squamish First Nations gets a good deal there. So he's got quite the business acumen background in terms of being a government entity negotiating with private interests. And I think that sets him up well in terms of his ability to say that he's qualified for the job of mayor of Vancouver. That's something that certainly is a concern for some of the other people that are running. He's just a very interesting candidate, and I think it's really fantastic to have an Indigenous voice come forward for mayor.
Well, and it's those development ties specifically. I've seen a lot of media and other sources on Twitter, and the trolls definitely latch onto as heavily criticizing, and I've never looked fully into what the deals of the Jericho land redevelopment, the Molson Brewery redevelopment. But they are big deals. Yeah. This is $1 billion.
The Jericho lands deal has held up every other treaty negotiation in BC because it's so big that the BC government has been afraid to set precedents with smaller deals that would then be applied to the Jericho lands deal and cost the government significantly more money. I mean, this is a huge plot of land that is half owned by the provincial government, which also includes West Point Grey Academy, the private high school, as well as the federal government lands, which are owned by the Department of National Defense, which is the now vacant Jericho Garrison. This is a huge plot of land that's going to be redeveloped, and it's a very complicated process.
So, like, people might be criticizing him right now or trolling him right now on this, but if he wins the Vision Vancouver nomination, this is an absolute asset for him. Like, it is something that people who are concerned about Vision's ability to work with developers or you know, those people still exist, even though all evidence suggests that, you know, it goes fine. About a new mayor's ability to work with the business community, will be absolutely thrilled to see things like Woodfibre and Jericho Lands and a giant billboard on Chief Campbell's resume.
Yeah, and if people are interested, there's a Megan Stewart article from VanMag from 2010 that I was able to dig up, which is a long interview with Ian Campbell. It's very interesting. It's called Bringing the Squamish Nation into the Global Market. We can put the link in the show notes. There's some really interesting quotes about where he's going and what his views are on corporate interactions with government and so on. And so it's an interesting one.
It's worth mentioning before I get into Tlaib, when Ian Campbell announced, he was backed by Andrea Reimer and a few other vision
luminaries
is a good word for it. So
he's got the establishment vote. Yeah.
And it seems like his is the campaign to beat. Now, there's only one other campaign, as far as we know, for the vision nomination. That's Tlaib Nur Mohammed.
And that's all there will be, by the way, because the nomination deadline has closed.
But Vision wasn't saying who put their name into the nomination. They were letting each person. So you could have a stealth campaign, which is a bad way to do politics, but it could exist.
Unlikely, though.
Unlikely. So Tlaib is a former candidate for the Federal Liberal Party in North Vancouver. Interestingly, both of these people are from North Vancouver.
Well, remember, the Squamish First Nations is while while Ian Campbell resides in North Vancouver, the Squamish First Nations does currently own a lot of have a lot of land interest in Vancouver, and he's been fairly heavily involved in Vancouver-based issues. And also from that indigenous lens, and I don't think necessarily that just because you have a business interest in a city, you should have a say. But from an indigenous lens,
I think the business vote should come back.
Oh God!
Oh,
from an indigenous lens. Huge swaths of Squamish First Nations territory was seized from the Squamish peoples, and his lineage, like his background, is people that lived there and were forced out of Vancouver. In many ways, some of them were forced out of Vancouver in the sense that in the morning, people came and loaded their stuff onto barges and pushed them onto the barges and sent them to the North Shore. And so it's not the same as when you criticize somebody for running outside of their area, because I think that indigenous lens is really valid.
So Tlaib is a tech entrepreneur. He's been involved in a bunch of companies, even one that acquired Expedia, apparently. He was vice president with VANOC, the Olympic Committee, here in Vancouver. He was also a director of the Air India Review and has been an advisor to Bob Rae. So he's got deep connections in business, nonprofit, and federal government.
As I said last week, he has that kind of resume that someone who eventually wants to run for office builds up for themselves, not only like in their business life, but sitting on boards and commissions and other public interest, public affairs panel type things.
And notably, not that it's all that important, but he does speak 8 languages.
So I don't think he's as much of a write-off candidate as the initial feeling was, because it was Ian Campbell has all this excitement and Tlaib is the other guy just trying to raise his profile. He does have experience political organizing.
Yeah.
And it seems like maybe he can't win, but at very least he's going to mount a challenge.
He could potentially win, right? I think Ian Campbell has the establishment vote and a lot of the support of sort of the party stalwarts. But Tlaib Nur Mohammed has demonstrated an organizing capacity over his career that could see him sign up large numbers of members. From Vision's perspective, this is a spoil of riches, because Ian Campbell has the inside edge, will probably win, but Tlaib Nur Mohammed will likely become, say, a council candidate for them, and additionally will sign up a bunch of members, bring in a bunch of money, and assist the party and revitalizing itself.
Also, you mentioned that those vision luminaries who were endorsing Ian Campbell, not a lot of those were federal liberals. There were a lot of, Green and NDP people who were standing up behind him, but Tlaib is a federal liberal, and I would be unsurprised if the federal liberal machine started, at least in part, grinding out memberships to support a Nur Mohammed candidacy.
Yeah, that's a really good point. We talked about it a lot in the last election, where the BC Liberals are really an amalgam of sort of center-right federal liberals and conservative members on the federal scene. The Vision Vancouver movement is really an amalgam of sort of moderate.
Let's not call it a movement. It's a party.
Okay, the party. The Vision Vancouver party is really a bit of an amalgam of moderate New Democrats and federal liberals. And so that those two wings, and Matthew, you'd have more experience with this than I, but with the BC Liberals, it's very odd to have two wings of other governmental level parties spending time together, because
they tend to hate each other.
Yeah, exactly.
But BC has gotten so comfortable with that. Like, I know the NDP, has their purity agenda, but
it's so depends if we're in government or not.
Yeah. It depends on whether you decide to hate yourselves or yourselves and other people.
It's usually the former.
Yeah. But the BC Liberals have, and you alluded to this in the very first episode, BC's right and center factions of its political spectrum have a long history of working together to keep the left out. And Vision has taken that and mirrored it onto both sides of the political spectrum.
Keep the right and the left out.
Keep the right and the left out. Just, you know, move blandly forward.
Vision. If Vision's aim, which it seems like, is to revitalize itself and move past the Gregor Robertson era, this is definitely, I think, a sign that they're in a good position to do so.
And they've had a few people come forward for council and school board nominations this past week. Erin Arnold, who's a longtime NDP activist here in Vancouver, she's put her name forward for school board. And so they're starting to generate that momentum that seemed like they wouldn't be able to get even a month ago.
Well, I hope you've bought your membership because the cutoff was 2 days ago.
Yeah,
if you are a current Vision member, congratulations. You have the opportunity to vote for either Talib Mahmoud Mohammed or Ian Campbell for mayor. And if you don't, tough bananas.
Well, and to be clear, it's my understanding of their rules that the membership locks in 30 days before. I could be incorrect, but that's been my understanding. That's what's been sort of passed on to me verbally by people.
And the leader will be selected on June 24th, to be fully clear.
Yeah, and so we'll know on June 24th who the Vision mayoral candidate is, and they'll do a council nominations and parks board and school board from there. I was told last night that the Greens have their nomination process wrapping up around the same time for their council candidates, and so everything should be in place by the end of June in terms of who's running.
Well, and on June 3rd, the NPA is picking their leader, as we mentioned.
Yep. Yes, so let us move all the way to the right of the Vancouver political spectrum and take a look at the Purple Party.
We talked in depth.
Giant purple people eater. And while we have talked in depth about, yes, as you mentioned, the mayoral candidates last episode, we have been trying to get in contact with Glenn Chernin. And I have sent him numerous Twitter messages and emails, as is requested on his website. And unfortunately, we have not been able to make contact with him, so we haven't been able to bring you any interview with him. Glenn, if you are listening, please do get in touch. We would love to get something out. And, you know, certainly maybe we'll talk after you win the nomination or lose it. Who knows?
At very least, Dan Fumano in the Vancouver Sun did have an excellent interview with Mr. Chernin.
Yeah, there's been a decent amount
Jen St. Dennis
coverage. Jen St. Dennis did one as well. And wasn't there one in the Courier, I believe, that came out?
I don't know if that was a direct interview or more of just a
the collection recollection of information about him. And that is one of the things, is one of the reasons we haven't really covered Glenn Chernin more is because it's hard to find anything out about him. He doesn't appear to have
a job.
Day job. He doesn't appear to have an education. He doesn't appear to have...
And this might just be like bad search engine optimization and bad website.
He's been quoted as saying he hasn't had a conventional job in 20 years.
Okay, that is a meaningless statement.
And that his income source is from managing his investment portfolio.
Okay, great. Capital gains. Good for him.
Yeah, he appears to be inherited wealth, but I'm not confirmed on that.
I thought it was cold effects money.
That story seems to be that his father made the money as well.
But we will ask him
when
we get a chance.
Glenn, if we have gotten anything wrong, please do get in touch with us so we can correct the record.
But he really hasn't put forward any qualifications. He's shockingly unqualified to be a city councilor, let alone a mayor, based on the qualifications he himself has put forward.
I used to think there were qualifications to be president of the United States, though, but look where we are now.
I guess inherited wealth can carry you pretty far.
But aside from the NPA, it looks increasingly like there will be another front on the right side, or the growing array of political parties out there.
Can we get a full rainbow by the time the election rolls around? Only time will tell, but we've got yellow, purple, blue, green, and I don't know what color this new party is going to take, but maybe red, orange, who knows?
And it may be called Yes Vancouver, according to Mike Howell in the Vancouver Courier.
Which is a name that Matthew and I are very divided on. I think it sounds dumb.
I think it is fine. It's fine. It's not like super inspiring, but Yes Vancouver doesn't like trip up the tongue so much as, you know, other options that I think they could have gone with.
And it's about as instructive in terms of what you stand for as Vision Vancouver at this point. So.
Or Nonpartisan Association. Or COPE.
Well, at least that one has the word progressive in it.
Which has become meaningless politically. But Bremner released a Facebook statement this week that he said he's investigating options of a new party, which was the slowest rollout. And I guess we're waiting until after the NPA picks their mayor before we might hear anything else from them.
But I did have a chance to sit down with Hector, and Hector had very strongly alluded to the fact that a new party is about to be formed.
The worst kept secret.
Yeah, well, especially, you know, by him, especially. So why don't we take a look at that interview, and you guys can tell me what you think. I've had a chance to sit down with Hector Bremner. Hector is a former MPA candidate for mayor and is now working on some other electoral avenues. Hello, Hector. Thank you so much for sitting down with me.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for having me.
So the last time the Cambie Report caught up with you, it was just the day after the NPA deep sixed your previous candidacy. And a couple of things have taken place since then. So do you want to give everyone an update on what things have looked like from your perspective?
Yeah, it's been a tremendous experience. I have to say, you know, I think while many thought would be a tremendous negative, actually people rallied around me and us and the greater cause of what we're doing. And people realized that, you know, that if you stand on the sidelines and, you know, if you continue to care but without acting, mm-hmm. you know, you unfortunately leave yourself behind. And so people have really rallied around this. It's invigorated the movement, and the response has been overwhelming. So I have to say it's been very positive, and it's gotten to the point where, you know, people have seen, but we wanted to be transparent, and we've now sort of officially said that we are now, after a lot of consultation and speaking with people, saying, look, we're going to probably start our own endeavor here, but if we're going to do that, what is it going to look like?
All right. So what is it going to look like, and what's that series of discussions taking shape to seem like in the next couple of days, weeks?
Right now, I should say over the last couple of weeks, we've had a few meetings with people that have been supporters, and people we asked, are you interested in you know, continuing to support me and what we've been trying to achieve? And we had about 50, 55 people out at a meeting last week, and they all said, look, sign me up. They've signed up to various committees and roles and getting to work and getting the job done to create something new. And it's been really exciting. So it looks like the Let's Fix Housing movement, what we were trying to do with the NPA, which was bring it back to its former glory, where it was a big tent, where it welcomed everyone's ideas, not just a small group of highly ideological views, but everyone's views. And, you know, we started this whole campaign last year on four key principles, and that was more hip hop. Yeah. But we were also really focused on bringing people together, stopping playing politics, just taking the good ideas and bringing people, just getting the job done. Mm-hmm. And those four principles, those four guiding principles, have really got us where we needed to get to. And you know, so far it's been really fantastic. So that continues to guide us, that's kind of where it's shaping up.
So if you're looking at founding a new organization, how do you see yourself as safeguarding it from the same thing that happened to the MPA, as being taken over by HALT-type activists?
Well, I think that, you know, you can only, I guess, curate it so much or whatever. I mean, you can't have it both ways. I mean, you want to be open and inclusive, and you can't be, you know, closed and restrictive. So, you know, you can't do both at the same time. So, you know, I think that people and the candidates and the people that are going to, you know, come out and support the a nomination race within whatever it is that we create are going to be people that are going to be committed, and they're going to understand that this is about a pro-housing movement, that it's about a pro-democracy movement, and it's about bringing common sense back to City Hall in Vancouver. And I'm pretty sure that you know, we won't have too much of those challenges.
Do you think that you'll still be able to appeal to what has traditionally been the NPA core demographic, the homeowner, the, you know, Carisdalian or Dunbar person?
Absolutely. Actually, I think those people en masse are the ones that have been contacting me and saying, look, you know, we've been 40-year supporters of the NPA, but, you know, enough is enough. We've been let down too many times in the electoral process. Too much of this inside culture or country club kind of nonsense that keeps on happening, and you know, they're frustrated. What they want is common sense, and what they're willing to do is work with other people. You know, we've taken on and looked at, we've seen polling and numbers right now. I'll tell you that even the plus 55 white male living in Carisdale is supportive of more density in all neighborhoods in the city of Vancouver. So vast majority of people support this now. So, you know, maybe that wasn't wasn't that way 5 or 6 years ago. But obviously with $5 million median sale prices in the west side and $3 million on the east side, you know, there's been a sort of a coming to clarity on all of this. And I think that people are ready to move forward in a progressive way. Incrementalism being proposed, or just downright regressivism being proposed by other candidates within the NPA, you know, is just not helping anyone. And I think that people are excited and motivated by our bold approach, and we're willing to take a really broad range and aggressive approach to correcting our city for the 21st century.
So you mentioned that 55-year-old white male from Kerrisdale. Now, that type of person has been well represented on Vancouver City Councils of days gone by. Is there anything that your party is going to be doing in order to try and encourage more women to run, more ethnic minorities to run, more people to encourage the slate that your new party would be putting forward to represent something that looks more like the face of Vancouver today?
Well, I think we were already doing that within the NPA, and people saw that. Mm-hmm. And we remain absolutely committed to that. And, you know, I think it's something that some people feel that you can only create diversity in gender, age, and ethnicity through quota systems. But I've always believed that if you operate with an open door and give people of those demographics something that speaks to them and give them a voice and set a table for them, they will come. And they are. And I would say if you ever attend a meeting of our campaign meetings, it is very diverse is the only other way to describe it. I think, you know, it's somebody always in the meeting actually even has sort of a profound moment of awareness, and they're looking around the room and going, oh my God, I've never seen a political meeting like this. So we have presented something radically different from politics in Vancouver. And so I think naturally we are attracting the radically different.
So what are the next steps for you? Like, if people want to get involved, how should they get in contact with you or someone who is involved in creating this new organization?
So we've got the Facebook page, which is probably the easiest way to communicate with us. And we've been accepting messages through there. We have a website, obviously, with emails.
This is Let's Fix Housing.
Yeah, if you look up HectorBremner.com. So okay. If you go to HectorBremner.com, if I can say my own name, HectorBremner.com. If you go to the website, you can shoot us a line. But of course, comment on Facebook or reach out to us and send us a direct message. But if you're interested in volunteering, you're interested in being involved, or you feel like you have something to contribute, or maybe you want to run, or whatever it is that you feel that you have to give or want to give, then we're really open to it. It's about an open door and shaping something that matters to the most amount of Vancouverites.
Any ill feelings towards the NPA? Thoughts on what their actions mean for democracy in Vancouver?
None. This is really not about looking backwards. It's about looking forwards. And, you know, I recognize that I was a threat to the, you know, career aspirations of some individuals and the beliefs of some others. And they were a small group, and, you know, they were able to do what they were able to do. And, you know, I'll leave that for the historians to decide whether or not that was appropriate. But as I said in my response letter to the board and of their rejection letter of me, was, you know, I'm forgiven and I'm moving on. I'm really looking. There's just too much, and there's just so much broken within our city that we need to fix and that we need to focus on. Focusing on the inside baseball and this type of internal dynamics is just a distraction.
All right. Absolutely, Hector. Thank you so much for sitting down with me. Hector is a candidate for mayor, I guess, at this point, were we saying?
Well, maybe.
Maybe. Can't pin you down to something yet. All right. Well, Hector is asking people to vote for him for what position. It is not quite revealed, but thank you so much, Hector, for sitting down with me. I really appreciate it.
Much appreciated. Thanks, Omhir. Happy to come anytime.
All right.
We've heard from Hector a few times now. I've interviewed him on Politico. So you guys have interviewed him on Pod Keep Our Land. We've interviewed mm-hmm. him on this show. And I find he's a great talker at saying a lot without necessarily always saying much. He is good at, you know, spouting those platitudes and talking about the big tent and bringing people together, positive visions. We know he's in favor of densifying, which is at least more than we know about some of the other candidates out there. I'm still not sold on the guy.
Yeah, it's hard to pin him down on anything. And, you know, it's early days. And I've said before that, you know, you can't really complain about somebody not having particular policy positions early on in their launch. But
hey, but I think that that criticism, while I think it is warranted for basically everyone else who has been running, like, Hector has been clear. He is running to upzone Vancouver. Like, that's why. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the progressive-regressive alliance that he has decided to array behind himself can believe whatever the fuck they want to believe on any other issue as long as they want to be upzoning Vancouver. Yep.
And we've seen a bunch of interesting things. I know Adrian Crook has been talking a bit about bike lane expansion. So maybe they want to set themselves as not being an anti-bike lane party because the NPA has managed to sink themselves repeatedly by focusing on bike lanes. And so maybe that's coming out. We're tea leaf reading at this point, trying to figure out where they're going
to
stand.
Not to delve back too much into the Chernin issue, but like, Glenn Chernin has a point on his platform saying that he pledges to return Point Grey Road to a public transportation route. And I keep thinking, are bikes not part of the public? Like, you're talking about, like, changing mode share. You're talking about changing mode rather than...
Ugh. And he said he'll rip out the 10th Avenue bikeway bikeway infrastructure development on 10th at the hospital zone and things like that.
Oh my God, it's just to stop people from being killed by ambulances, which is not the John purpose Cooper's, of an ambulance.
John Cooper says he'll put a moratorium on new bike lanes, and we don't know where Ken Sim stands.
Yeah, it's so bizarre to me that that's still believed to be a salient issue. But yeah, so it's going to be really interesting to see where this new party comes. I know that they've got some big names behind them, like we've talked about before, Mark Marison, Rob McDonald is wrapped up with them as well. Rob McDonald, the developer who bankrolled Suzanne Anton's NPA run 2011.
Which is a very interesting choice, given the party's already facing a lot of, or Hector Bremner is facing a lot of criticism, justly or not, about conflicts of interest and being too tied to developers and bringing them into your tent early.
And Ron McDonald is very...
I think their money is way more important than the votes that their presence might lose the prospective new party. Like,
but they can't give much money anymore.
Oh yeah, he can, because you know, Rob McDonald can pull together a $1,200 a plate dinner with, which is the maximum you can donate, with, you know, 50 of his friends, and all of a sudden you've pulled in whatever math that is.
It's only operational funding.
But yeah, so it's gonna be interesting. I've heard rumors that Rob McDonald may actually be running himself, which is interesting. And Erin Shum, the current independent Parks Board candidate, she might be running for them as well.
Parks Board Commissioner.
Parks Board Commissioner. Yeah, she's current Parks Board Commissioner. She was forced out of the NPA through what she alleged a series of bullying incidences that had occurred. And so
it sounded pretty toxic. Like,
it definitely did.
Very, very toxic situation that the NPA fellow Parks Board commissioners put her in.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, she was very justified in leaving the party.
I will be looking very closely when they start announcing candidates at their gender breakdown. They've already had criticisms of being an overly male group. You know, how do you, in today's day and age, run, say, 7 candidates and only one of them is a woman, say, if that were to occur? And I don't know what's going to happen. I'll be watching that closely.
Well, Hector says that, you know, obviously it's going to happen. So, you know, watch closely and maybe it'll happen and maybe it won't. And I think it would be, you know, foolish of us to start passing judgment before the chickens have bolted the barn door, as they probably say somewhere.
Flown the backyard coop.
Yeah.
Can we not have another election on chicken coops? So we wanted to talk a little bit about Vancouver. I think we've now started our Vancouverada series. We've been talking a little bit about Vancouver. And I think, Ian, you had a couple of ideas about Stanley Park that you wanted to bring up.
Yeah, and I know you know a lot more about this, Patrick, than I do, because you're just the wealth of Vancouverada. But some of the stories I've heard are just, we all know Stanley Park. We all have fond memories of it, but I don't think many Vancouverites actually know the whole history of it. And it's fascinating because it's not just a piece of wild nature that they left there. And it is bigger than New York Central Park.
The guy who designed Central Park and large amounts of the Chicago Exposition of 1891 is a guy named Frederick Law Olmsted. And he is widely regarded as one of the most influential landscape architects in history. The things that he did for Central Park, the idea of, instead of creating a giant, like, massive mall space like in Washington, D.C., but having this curated series of pathways and different places for people to enjoy the park is really something that he pioneered. He had a very clear idea of what he wanted in these parks. Like, you know, specific trees could provide shade or smell or erosion control. And it was meticulous planning that went into it.
And that really inspired the development in Stanley Park. I don't think that Olmsted actually was involved in Stanley Park at all, but it really inspired sort of the development of Stanley Park that occurred. There is a long form, a reasonably medium form article, I think I would say, in the Tai from about 2013 that I always pull up and send to people. It's called An Unnatural History of Stanley Park by Jesse Donaldson. It's a really fascinating look into the history of Stanley Park as it exists. And there's a number of other sources you can get them. But I think, Ian, you really wanted to talk about the squirrels.
Yeah, there's this weird history where this connection between Central Park and Stanley Park has really random bits. And one of the anecdotes that I read was none of the squirrels that live in Stanley Park are native to British Columbia.
Not quite. There are squirrels in Stanley Park that are native to it, but there are the squirrels that are not.
And this comes back to squirrels that were brought from New York City to Vancouver that have since bred like squirrels, I guess.
Squirrels.
I guess squirrels breed like rabbits because we now have plenty of New York squirrels living in Stanley Park here in Vancouver.
They're extremely invasive. They're not even from New York. They're actually they're European squirrels. And they are out-competing the other squirrels in Stanley Park. And they've expanded all the way out into the suburbs of Vancouver, all from this initial purchase of squirrels. And I can't remember how many it was. I think it was in the teens that came from Central Park in New York. It's a fascinating idea that we came to this land and decided that we needed to make it look more like our home in England.
One other thing I do want to bring up as I'm reading a bit more on the history is Stanley Park wasn't always just a park. When Vancouver was first being settled in the...
It was very much a village.
A village in the 19th century. There were also a lot of Chinese settlers there. Yep. And in 1889, they went, GTFO, we're going to make this nature land. And they forced those people out as... It's a very... Vancouver history in a way, as we've talked about in the last two.
And we lost a lot of archaeological history. We lost a lot of history of the indigenous peoples of Stanley Park as well. When we built the seawall, a lot of the seawall was built using materials derived from middens that were found along the seawall. And so they basically pulled out these middens that were, you know, extremely excellent for sources of archaeological data and history going back thousands of years in some cases. And we used it as building material for the seawall.
So a very mixed history to it, like most of Vancouver.
Yeah, and Gordon Price always likes to talk about, you know, we do love the seawall. It's wonderful to go on. No one would build the seawall today. It's wildly environmentally damaging.
Well, we can't get the Point Grey seawall done.
Oh, God.
But that's a separate...
That's a whole other ball of wax. But no, it's interesting that it's this environmentally damaging thing that's so beautiful to cycle down and walk down and rollerblade down. And it's such a core part of what it is to be Vancouver. But if we didn't have it now and somebody said we should do it, we would never be able to do it.
The Point Grey seawall will get built when the sea comes for Point Grey.
Not wrong. But yeah, Stanley Park's got a fascinating history.
We'll throw links to that Tai article in the show notes. Otherwise, thanks for listening. Slightly shorter episode than the last two, but the last two were longer than we intended to. Thanks again to everyone who's left a review on Apple Podcasts. We're up to 39 reviews, which is incredible. 800 downloads an episode.
And we'd like to throw a save the date. We're looking to do a live event on June the 11th, Monday, June the 11th. We're still looking for a location, and we'll get back to you on that probably on our next episode, as well as on Facebook and on Twitter. But we want to bring in our listeners to come to a establishment that serves alcohol and have a nice night with you guys and chat with you, see what you think about Vancouver and what you love about Vancouver and what you want to see in politics in Vancouver.
If you are the proprietor of such an establishment.
And you would like to provide some form of incentive for us to select your establishment.
You can email us at canbyreport@gmail.com or just email us there if you have tips, other information you want us to hear. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at canbyreport.
And enjoy the remaining 147 days of the election. We will see you in about a week's time.
Thanks for listening.